Guess who's back? Back again. Sneaky's back. Tell a friend. Yo! I'm really sorry I just did that. It was awful. It'll never happen again. But we are back. Sneaky Good Podcast, Episode 5. This one's about Burt Jones and Jamarcus Russell and the greatest quarterbacks in LSU history. Because we're trying to create a new LSU all-time team at every position. And this was sorting through that topic in part one of this episode. In part two, you just listened to Poser shit talk on the Grammys a lot. But here we are, episode one. I promise these will get out more regularly soon. Stick with us. Go into iTunes. Share, like, star, comment. Write on there how cool you think we are or whatever the shit you do in iTunes. Tweet us, Facebook, you know, all that social stuff. Tell somebody that you love us. Peace. I know, you led me with this beautiful intro.
I know, like,
and I totally biffed it.
No, because normally you're recording, so I was like, all right, I'm going to, and I normally stop down. I'm like, hey, are we recording? And then I was like, no, this is a good, got a good rhythm. I'm just going to kick into it. And now if you're recording now, it means that people missed out on all sorts of good shit. We were talking for like half an hour about great stuff.
Just the trade secrets.
You missed it all.
The insider info.
Yeah, missed everything. It's just the...
Yeah, well, if they subscribe to the premium podcast.
Well, clearly, if they, the members only podcast.
Oh, someday.
Someday I'll be cashing those, you know, big checks with extra zeros behind them.
It'll no longer be sneaky good. It'll just be outright good.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be it'll just be upfront good. So the whiskey is poured?
The whiskey is poured.
All right, we are ready to go. So we will try and do take two of a seamless start. So now I completely biffed that. So there is a start. So there's so you get nothing. So only the premium members who got the very sneak behind-the-scenes look got to hear the really good start. But
hey, we're nothing if not drunkenly stumbling into this.
God, it's been a long day. I've been angry all day because you made me watch the Grammys and it just pissed me. I have not watched the Grammys in probably 25 years, and I reminded myself why I don't do it because it just fills my heart with rage. I hate everything. By the end of it, I wanted everybody dead. So on that positive note, I am Poser, your co-host for the Sneaky Good Pod with Dan Davis, also known as Paul Crew.
Hello.
How's it going there, Dan?
It's good. It's I got my whiskey. And,
what kind of whiskey you got?
I have this. Let's see. It is Colonel E.H. Taylor. It's a single barrel that I guess is a little rarer, according to my guy.
You have a whiskey guy?
Yeah, not really.
That's important. That's a good thing if you've got a...
I have a local store around the corner that's just... They have an impressively good selection for a tiny little corner store, so...
Never let that go. That's important stuff.
I know, and they're really nice guys, so I go in there all the time. And their prices are good, too, so it's not like they're gouging you just for being neighborhoody.
I've got an outstanding beer guy.
So, yeah, you've mentioned this before.
So I try not to let my beer guy go.
And those connections are vital.
They really are, particularly once you move to the burbs. Like the once you are separated out from all of society, you need those few pockets of cool in the suburban wasteland.
That's very true. And
a beer guy is one of the most important things you can have. Well, we are recording this on Wednesday night. LSU has managed to lose yet another basketball game.
Oh, God. Are we leading with basketball?
Well, we're just at least going to mention how much it's depressing, and then we'll talk things that are happier. So let's just get it out of the way and talk about it. LSU seemed to be getting out of the woods this weekend with a big win.
I was so excited to come and, like, have a positive, you know, like, ooh, we got a good win. We're moving in the right direction kind of chat.
And we were so close to it, and then they lost to Alabama. Yeah. And the depressing thing is we still might make the tournament. I know that's a terrible way to say it, but the bubble's really terrible this year.
It really is.
If you look around, the one bid leagues are pretty much all one bids. There's not a Missouri Valley this year that looks like it's going to get four teams or anything like that.
No. I'm pretty certain, too, that whoever winds up winning the tournament will be a really, like, underwhelming, like, an eight seed or something. Something ridiculous, because
here's
even the top teams aren't very good right now.
Yeah, because everybody's losing.
Yeah, Oklahoma this lost.
Weekend, yeah, Oklahoma lost tonight. This weekend, what was it, 10 of the top 25 lost?
Yeah.
So here's my under-the-radar pick. Wichita State.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because Baker and Van Vliet, they're seniors, I think. They've been there forever. It seems like they've been there for like 9 years. But I think this is their last go-around. And so they've been quietly decent all year. So just if Wichita State's ever going to win anything, it'll be this year.
That would make my family happy. Both my brothers go to Wichita State.
Well, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
I've been really drunk in Wichita. That's really all.
I have too.
It's an outstanding city to be drunk in, because that's really all there is to do.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
See, proof I've been there. that's really all the bad. We kind of beat the dead horse last week about basketball. They're in definite show me mode.
Yeah.
So the season's not over. They can turn it around, but they're kind of where they were before this weekend. They now need to beat a team that looks better than them. They need a big win again.
Yeah, they've got to prove it again.
And so if they get it, they'll sneak into the tournament as a 10 or an 11 seed. And if they don't, they'll miss. And they'll go to the NIT, and we will have wasted Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
sigh. So let's talk about something fun. Coaching changes.
All right. Officially announced. Well, I guess they were officially announced
over today.
The weekend. Well, yeah, I guess they were introduced today.
Yeah, I never know what's the actual official.
Yeah.
But today was the press conference. By the time this gets released to everybody, it'll be 2 or 3 days in the past.
Yeah.
Honestly, once the changes happen, they happen really quick.
Yeah, it really went really quick.
And we're still up in the air on Cam Cameron, who has not signed his extension as of yet. They keep telling us it's a done deal, but the longer it goes on, the more I wonder how done of a deal it is.
I know. And they, I feel like typically when new hires are announced, Miles will field a couple questions, and he just really got in and out of there. Maybe I'm making that up.
No, I think, well, he likes to answer questions.
He does.
Let's be honest. Every time there's a press conference, he answers questions. I'm hard-pressed to think of a time he didn't answer questions.
Today, did he answer any today?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he's very just, these are the guys, thank you. He walked off. I was like, okay.
Yeah, if you look at who we got, losing Frank Wilson was one of those things that we knew was going to happen eventually.
Yes.
So it's hard to be depressed about that. You're happy that he got a head coaching opportunity. He didn't leave us for a lateral move. He left the program for a really big opportunity, and
and it seems like they did a good job of anticipating it. You know, I don't know if you felt that way, but it was like all of his recruiting targets were tied up. It just seemed like the plan was in place to be like, we're ready for this move. It's not going to be like, oh shit, what do we do now kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we talked about that on the first or second pod, where we're just like, Frank Wilson has nobody left on his board.
Yes.
He's done. And so it was time for him to go. There's only so long a guy can be your running back coach.
Yeah.
I mean, coaching is a career where you have to be moving forward or you're moving backwards. So I'm surprised he didn't get a coordinator job first, but
same here.
I'm really looking forward to him at UTSA. I'm glad he got that opportunity. It's a good gig. It's an under-the-radar school, but UTSA is not a terrible program. And there's lots of talent in the area. And if you think about it, there's not a whole lot of local competition for talent. I mean, you have Texas and A&M being the big boys who can come in, but it's a pretty hefty drive to those places. So San Antonio, he has San Antonio to himself, which is a pretty big burg.
Yeah, and he's, I guess Houston, Herman's sort of making some waves, but Herman's not going to go that far out of the Houston Metroplex to get his talent.
Would you?
So, and I think I saw that he already pulled in like the school's top, the highest ranked recruit in UTSA history already. So,
that's not surprising. That's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, so. And he'll go and pluck a lot of those Louisiana kids too that are just, that's a little bit of a hike, but he'll have his connections to work there. So I hope he succeeds.
But yeah, he got a new job and LSU replaced him in less than a week.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you want to see. This was a no muss, no fuss, no drama. There was no short list. Before we even could think about, who should we hire for this job? LSU had already hired somebody.
Yeah, and it was pretty much the guy. I know you and I talked about him offline. How do you, because we talked about this when he got hired at Tech. At the time, you were feeling a little icky about potentially poaching him right after he took another job.
Yeah, that always makes me feel a little icky where they announce him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, sorry, I didn't mean it.
Yeah, and this was full on, too. It wasn't like a rumor that he's taking the Tech job and then he signs with LSU. It was like, no, he openly addressed the fact that he was at Tech in the press conference today.
Yeah, that I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not going to lie. Then this is one of those in love and war, everything's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I'm not going to say this is our finest moment in searching for a coach. It's not so bad that it's like I'm going to condemn the program. This is unethical. This is horrible. And you know we should string Miles up by his toenails. It's not. It's nothing like that. I'm just saying in general, it feels a little icky.
Yeah.
I mean, he had just signed a contract with Tech.
Yeah, that's fair. He had no buyout, I guess. I mean, his answer, I think someone asked him why, and he was basically like, why would I say no? I mean, I don't blame him. But.
And that's really what it comes down to. This is one of those, nothing against you, Tech. You're a fine football program. You're just not LSU. LSU is one of the blue bloods now.
Yeah, and he's from Louisiana, so it's like, it's home.
Yeah, so this was not a hard sell, and I do feel bad for Texas Tech. I think they thought they had wrapped up their position, thought they had gotten a really good recruiter. They're ready to hit the ground running, and then it's taken from them about 2 weeks after they made the hire.
Yeah.
And that's it's not right. I think that's what it comes down to. It's not so wrong that this is what's wrong with college sports or anything, but it's enough to be like, sorry, our bad.
Yeah. Yeah, the timing's not ideal, that's for sure. It is, I mean, to speak to the merit of the hire purely, I think it's a pretty good hire. I spend like way too much time trying to research potential candidates because I find this so fascinating and I like sort of stumbling on up-and-coming coaching candidates. So I cruised around a lot of NFL staffs to sort of look at like, Not the main position coaches even, but like, you know, those NFL staffs, they have like 15 guys and then there's like the quality control coach and the offensive assistant, whatever, you know, it's usually like some 23-year-old guy that didn't make it in the league and now he's a coach kind of thing.
Right.
So I was looking for those type of people, seeing if there's any former LSU guys around. And really, I wound up just being like, there's probably not a better candidate than Jabbar. Like, the curbside appeal is there. Obviously, he's from Louisiana. He's got deep ties in NOLA. I would have liked him to have a little more college recruiting experience other than just basically Tech and a week or whatever. Louisiana Tech and then like a week or two at Texas Tech. But, I mean, the reality was we're not going to find another Frank Wilson. We just weren't. That wasn't going to happen. He doesn't exist.
The big thing is running back coach is a recruiting position.
Yes, 100%.
So at the end of the day, he is going to be evaluated by how well he recruits.
Yep.
So it's a big question mark of how well he'll recruit. But that said, when you hire a running back coach, it's pretty hard to hire an established running back coach. This is the way you get your foot in the door. This is I don't want to call it an entry-level position because it's a little bit higher up the food chain than that, but it's entry-level for management is the best way to say it. So this is his first really big gig. And that's just what running back coaches around college football are. They're young guys who are supposed to be really good recruiters, exciting guys who can put energy into the program. Also because it's kind of a position where it's hard to screw up coaching. And hopefully he grows into the position. And yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited about the hire because I remember you were saying something about how Frank Wilson had a year or two ago pointed him out as a potential replacement or at least an up-and-comer in the field.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bruce Feldman tweeted it out when the hire was announced that he met Jabbar Jalouk two or three years ago, and Frank Wilson was the one that introduced it to him and, like, really sung his praises. So, and there was Feldman wasn't the only one. There was a few different media, national media, not local, that come out and said, yeah, we've heard big things about this guy. So that, I think, made me feel even better about it. Not that...
Yeah, there's really nothing to feel bad about the hire.
Yeah.
And honestly, a hire like this, it's always perspective.
Yeah.
You just don't know at this level.
Yeah, there's always hires, too, that... Okay, the Kevin Steele one's a little different because any coordinator hire way supersedes a position hire.
Yes.
So I'm going to throw that out. But Tony Ball hire last year was kind of underwhelming, to be honest. Like, he had a good track record with the guys he'd worked with at Georgia, but he wasn't a very good recruiter. And I think it stung, too, that we were losing Adam Henry, who had done such good work here with Beckham and Landry, that it was kind of like maybe inevitably to be disappointing, but Ball wasn't that inspiring of a hire. So to segue to the other hire, he was let go, you know, seemingly when as far as we received the news, they announced Jabbar Jalouk was being hired and that also Tony Ball was no longer with the program, which is Les's very friendly way of firing people, basically.
Yeah, I think that's it. And also, when Tony Ball got hired, I seem to remember the standard line was, well, he's not much of a recruiter, but he's a great coach.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's not the worst thing in the world. No. LSU's receivers could use some coaching up. If nothing else, that they weren't real aggressive at blocking, which was something the program really prided itself on 5 or 6 years ago, which has kind of gone by the wayside in recent years. And to give Ball credit, I feel this year the receivers blocked better than they had in prior years.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get a 1,950-yard rusher if your receivers aren't blocking.
Yeah, and I think the difference is that it used to be, and this is a little bit of back in my dayism, but it's not that far away, it was the top guy was a really good blocker. Like, you know, it kind of started with Clayton.
Yeah.
Clayton's a great blocker.
Yeah.
So he kind of passed it down, and it was a point of pride that the number one receiver would also block.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
And now it's sort of like when LSU was in formation, they would send in the blocking guys.
Yeah.
They would send in Quinn and Yarse, and they'd be the guys responsible for blocking because certainly we're not going to let, you know, Malachi or Darrell block anybody. That's just crazy talk. And I think that was my biggest problem with Ball. And I didn't really have a huge problem with him. I don't think he was a bad coach. I'm not sad that he left, but at the same time, I was. It was like, no, please stay, kind of.
Yeah.
But I think the big knock is that we still haven't gotten back to the fact of our number one receiver still doesn't block. And on this team, that is so critical for LSU. You need Malachi Dupree to step up and take someone's head off at least once. I just want one time where he just goes out there and just lays some crushing block on somebody just to show that there's some pride that, hey, even the number one guy blocks. Because then it filters its way down the lineup.
Yeah, it does. And plus, like, we've put all these wide receivers in the league, and it's sure as hell not because they're generating gobs of stats in the passing game. And it's because they can do all these little pro things right. They block. They give effort. And they know how to be contributors even when they aren't catching the ball. And that's a big thing in NFL.
Yeah, it totally is.
And I'm not even excluding Beckham and Landry from this because, yes, they were wonderful receivers and caught the ball, but those two blocked their asses off.
Yeah, those guys. I will say those guys were hellacious blockers. They did everything. Landry and Beckham are
next level.
I just don't give the coaches credit for guys that good.
No, like, yeah.
It's really, that's those fair. Two guys were just amazing. It's almost like they pushed each other. And okay, Henry gets credit because he was the coach. But really, it was because Landry and Beckham were just those kind of guys.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I think the problem is it didn't filter down to other players. It kind of just filtered between the two of them. It was like a loop just between those two guys.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a shame, but there's really nothing – you can't blame it on those two guys. They did set the example. It just didn't filter.
So the new coach is Damian Craig.
Hurts me deeply. Hurts me deeply.
Yeah, so I mean, if you get into LSU football history, this is a somewhat painful hire because of the past.
Yes, Damian Craig is way up on the list of LSU villains. He killed us. He was a really good player. And
really good.
And he, man, that 1997 game, I still just can't talk about it. It Cecil Collins rushed for a billion yards. I know it's like 230, but still, it felt like a billion.
It felt like a billion, yes.
And Damian Craig, who had really done not nothing all night, but he didn't have the best of games, just had an incredible – it wasn't even a two-minute drill because I think they got the ball back, and this is all from memory, so I could be a little bit off. I think they got the ball back with like 6 or 7 minutes left, and he drove them all the way down the field and ate up most of the clock.
He referenced it today in his press conference.
Yeah, he referenced that, and he also referenced the 1996 game where yes. We beat them, and he said the receiver was in.
Yeah.
So I like that he's still talking trash. And and I'm kind of joking when I say this hurts me. I'm only kind of joking because those memories are painful. Those are – the 97 loss is really one of those losses that just has stuck with me for a long, long time. It was a painful loss as an LSU fan, but – Damian Craig, he was a great player. He was an incredible competitor. He was the kind of guy you hated because he was good and that he ripped your heart out.
Yeah.
That's the best kind of sports hate. I didn't hate him because I thought he was dirty or took money or he beat his girlfriend or anything. It's none of that. It was he was good and he beat us, and that sucked.
Yeah, it's like the Tebow level of hate. Like,
yeah, it really was.
Damn it. So,
having those memories flood back is actually, it's kind of fun. It's like, oh, I remember those games because the LSU-Auburn rivalry isn't quite what it was. It's still there, but it doesn't quite have the edge that it had in the late 90s, which is fine. Rivalries ebb and flow.
Yeah.
So I liked kind of having that trip down memory lane. But as a coach, I mean, what a way to pilfer a staff.
Yeah. Thanks, Auburn.
I mean, if you would have said before postseason started, before the offseason, and you offered as a trade, hey, we'll give you Kevin Steele, you give us Damian Craig. If this was like fantasy football, they say no to that trade, right?
You would think so.
I mean, that's a bad trade.
Yeah.
We got rid of a defensive coordinator who, let's just say, was not beloved.
No.
And LSU takes from Auburn their number one recruiter and also kind of a favorite son.
Yeah. That's his alma mater. Like that's what blows my mind the most.
How does that happen?
How do you let it? Yeah. I get, so the big rumor or whatever, I don't even know if it's a rumor, but basically that there's ill will, like he didn't get along with Malzahn. And I'm like, Gus, like that's not a relationship you let fall out of whack, you know, like you keep that one intact.
Yeah, he was their number one recruiter. He's a guy you keep happy.
That'd be like in the last 8 years, less like Frank Wilson leaving because he was annoyed with Les, like not getting along with Les. So he leaves and takes like the Georgia running back's job. Like that's basically what just happened.
Yeah, you cannot let that happen. It's just insane. And so I'm really excited by that hire. And also, we don't really have a quarterback's coach on staff. Technically, it's Cam.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to bet that Damian Craig knows a little bit about being quarterback in the SEC. Right? Just a tad. So while he's still going to be the receivers coach, I think he can help our quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and when the hires were initially announced, I had tweeted something out, and I think I even commented about maybe this is a signal that we're moving to a spread system and spread principles on offense. And, Billy wrote back and he made a good point. You know, Craig is really a Jimbo disciple. And Jebbo's a pro style guy, so the spread stuff is really just since he was back at Auburn with Gus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a fair point. I do think LSU will trend more to that, but yeah, that's a different discussion for a different day.
I don't think we're suddenly going to be running the spread.
No.
But at the same time, I think we're going to see more three wide receiver sets.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big continuum between running a pure spread and running LSU's pretty much 1990 offense of always having two wide receivers, a tight end, and a running back, and never changing up the personnel.
Yeah.
Like you can spread the field out a little bit and have it not be the spread. And it'd be nice to see some more three wides. Heck, even occasionally run it out of the shotgun with maybe even a four wide receiver set. I'm just throwing stuff out on the wall here. And I think there might be some willingness to do that, to just mix up the formations a little.
Yeah, I said something about that too. Just like they are probably going to be like still a downhill power, maybe more spread formation, but the same philosophies. And someone was like, well, what does that look like? And I was like, well, basically kind of what Ohio State was. I mean, they maybe ran their quarterback a little more, but they're not like Auburn where, I mean, I know Auburn last year was a way different thing, but like Auburn with Nick Marshall and Cam Newton was like run the quarterback all the time kind of thing.
Yeah, take advantage of the best player in the field. If LSU looks like Tom Herman's Ohio State offense, I'm going to be a very happy person. I don't think it's going to be quite that good. Tom Herman, I think, is one of the best minds in college football right now. So I think that's setting the standard a little bit high. Oh, we're going to look like Ohio State. Oh, yeah, no problem.
Not in terms of quality, but in terms of style, I should have said.
you know what I mean. Like, it's just and people tend to, when you throw out a comparison, it's sort of like when you have a young player and you always compare him like a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, don't do that. It's just setting up the
everyone's going to be pissed off about this in 2 years.
It's setting the standard just way too ridiculous. But I would like to see just spreading out the field more, and whether that's the spread or just simply – look, all of football history is essentially offenses slowly spreading out their formations to use more of the field.
Yeah.
I mean that's – they started with a bunch formation and everyone together, and it was just sheer violence and power, and now they spread horizontally and vertically. That's – if you look at the development of football, that's pretty much the whole history of the game.
Yeah. And you see the counterpunch now, too, with a guy like Harbaugh coming back and saying, no, I'm going to bunch everything back up, you know?
Exactly, because everybody's built to beat these things that are all, you know, fast. And
that's getting smaller and faster.
And that's kind of an LSU's offensive philosophy. It's like, hey, if everybody else is, you know, be running the spread and they're designed to stop these fast teams, we're going to outpower you, which is a good idea in principle. But the problem is Alabama pretty much is a power team.
Yeah.
And so is Arkansas, and Arkansas, well, they've beaten us the last 2 years, so I can't say we're better than Arkansas, but Arkansas is better at doing power than LSU is.
Yeah, at this point in time, yeah.
And so
I think we're getting back to it.
And also, let's face it, Mississippi State, though they spread stuff out, they kind of...
Yeah, they're a power team.
They still want to maul you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three teams already. So if LSU's the fourth, all of a sudden the defenses in the SEC West are built to stop power, not spread, if they have to choose, because the best teams are all running power. So I think in concept we're trying to zig when everybody else is zagging. The problem is everyone else in the division is also zigging.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And just to acknowledge Billy, the spread is a is not an offense, it's a formation, as he always says.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I'm not – I don't want to get – bogged down on that. And also, like, it's just the general philosophy of how you're doing things. And
no, I know.
And I think
we're on the same wavelength.
I think seeing new receivers coach, I think, is going to, I don't want to say help, but yeah, it'll help. Just the idea of not tipping our hand through formation or personnel. I think that was one of the biggest weaknesses of LSU's offense. If Trey Quinn was on the field, we were running the ball.
Yeah.
And you can't have a tell like that at a high-level college football.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys watch a ton of film. They know, and as I like to tell tell my wife, if I know it, they know it. Because I'm not in the film room. I just watch a bunch of football. Right. But I'm doing it on a casual level. So if I can call the play, certainly the other team can.
Yep.
Because they've actually put effort into it. And it's their job to know. And for me, that was the big thing. Quinn was always the key. If he's on the field, almost always we're running the ball. And so that's actually kind of a good reason why he's transferred. It gives away one of our big tells. So I think we lost a favorite toy. But on the flip side, I think Fournette will appreciate an offense that can spread the ball a little bit. It'll create space for our best player. You know, we don't want every other defense bunched in the middle ready just to hit Fournette over and over and over again. And also, you want him to get the ball in space.
Yeah.
If you can get him the ball in space and he get up ahead of steam before he hits his first defender, he's a pretty hard guy to tackle.
Yep. And we've talked about it on the show before, but next year you really probably want to lessen his overall touches but maximize the value of them. So that's exactly what you're hitting at, is that he doesn't need to be running the ball into six 300-pound bodies every single play. We need to find ways. That's a necessity to have. That has to happen.
I think so, too.
And at also, some point, but we can do a better job of getting him out into space and letting him fly.
And if we're going to continue running like a hammer into that anvil, you got to use Williams more.
Yeah. He's built for that. That's his
style.
Yeah.
And he's the guy running between the tackles. He can take the abuse. And I'm sorry, he's probably not going to have a long NFL career. So that's kind of his job in college football, is to take the abuse now.
Yes.
Sorry, buddy. Like, you're a great player. I actually really like you. You're probably one of my favorite players on the team. But let's be honest, you're on the team to take punishment.
And to give it.
Yeah, and to give it. When you get hit, you're hitting back.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, I think if you want to look at this big picture perspective, since I look at how many good things have happened to the program since the whole near overthrow that was stalled.
No, I think you're definitely right about that. We've had a great recruiting class since then. Three really big hires.
Mm-hmm.
The Aranda hire, I think, fits neatly in with all of this. We kept Orgeron, who was, you know, playing footsies, which I think was another really big thing. A couple people have now left the program. We've talked about Trey Quinn leaving the program.
Some of that was inevitable.
Yeah, it kind of is. I'm sad to lose Quinn. I really like Quinn, but at the same time, not the biggest of losses if you look at the depth chart.
No, we can afford to lose depth there. I was high on Quinn as a recruit. I probably lost some... I don't know what the word is. I'm not as high on him now for various reasons, but I don't mean that to downgrade the kid. I hope he goes to, like you and I talked about, like Baylor or somewhere and just kicks ass. Like, seems like a nice kid. So
I think he would do well in a spread offense.
Yeah,
and then of course Beckwith coming back. That was a
Beckwith and Neal and just, White,
and also there's just a feel around this program. And I think what's big about that is, and we've talked about this before, even on the site, there's been a bit of a malaise really ever since the game.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hung over this program. And if you want to criticize Les Miles, this is the biggest thing you can criticize him for. I think it's not just the fans who are trapped in the game. I think the coaching staff is a little bit trapped back in that game.
Yes.
It has altered the thinking of the program for 5 years. And it's just kind of just been a malaise and very Jimmy Carter. You know, everyone's just kind of hanging out, and it's just like you just can't break out of it. Everyone's just running through quicksand.
Yeah.
And I think this failed coup, for lack of a better term, has really put the spark back into Les. You kind of see, I don't know, he just seems more energized. And once again, this is all bullshit until they actually play football again.
Yep.
But that said, there's still that feeling. And we haven't had this feeling in a while. There's a genuine excitement that really hasn't been there over the past couple of years. Because the last couple of off seasons, I don't want to say have been dismal, but there's been a lot of fighting and doing a lot of butts. No, yeah. Really, it's not this bad. Or, but this, it'll be fine because of this. Or, but this. And this is, no, this team looks awesome.
Yeah.
And we've got a great coaching staff. There's no buts. There's no nothing. And I think the only but is that people are just afraid. It's like, but we've lost in the past. And I think that's a legitimate reason to be afraid. But it's just no fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the most optimistic offseason we've had in several years. And I think it helps, too. I mean, short of less, I don't think a single coach is left on staff from that 2011 game. I mean, Cragthorpe is here as an
yeah. –
I guess maybe Ensminger. Was he on the staff then?
Yeah, Ensminger was there.
Cragthorpe is in an off-field capacity.
And Stud. Sedwaro was on that staff.
Yeah, but he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
And then Haley's gone.
Pivato was – no, he was gone.
Yeah, he was gone. Who was our DB's coach back then? Was it still –
Was it still Raymond?
It could have been Raymond. Or was it Cooper back then? I don't even remember.
I think it was Cooper. I think you're right when you say
that. Yeah, I think that might have been like his last year.
And so, yeah, they've had its staff turnover. But, yeah, I just think
– It should be over is what I'm – like –
Well, it kind of just felt this team like less – it felt like – we were saying this on the site. It felt like he was out of ideas.
Yeah.
Like it was just like we're just trying the same stuff over and over and over again. And while a great coach – sometimes even great coaches have a lifespan and it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And – but this feels like a second wind. It really does. And this isn't just trying to look to the bright side. This is – all of a sudden, just everybody seems energized. That class that was so amazing 3 years ago, they're all juniors. They're in leadership positions now. We actually are going to have a senior class this year.
Yeah.
And we have a ton of young talent. And for the first time, they don't have to play.
Yes. That's huge.
Yeah. And I think that's a big point you made about Arden Key. Like last year, we needed Arden Key to be as good as he was.
Yeah.
And this year, it'd be great if someone came in and had that kind of impact, but we don't need it. And that's a nice position to be in because there's been a lot of need in the last couple of years. It has not been by accident LSU has been playing more freshmen than anybody else.
Yeah, and I got to say that, you know, if you are at a position where, whether you're an LSU fan or in the media or whatever, and you're looking at this team and just basically discounting them for some like ridiculous reason, all the empirical evidence points to this team being good. Like,
yes.
And I'm not talking about empirical evidence, like looking at the players. I'm talking about if we had no names, no knowledge of history, like just basically looked at a depth chart and said senior, senior, junior, 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 like everyone would be like, that team's going to be really good.
Yeah. Like, I think so.
No doubt in my mind that every single writer in America would be like, yep, they're going to be awesome. Who is that? That's LSU. Oh, okay. Oh, shit.
Well, right. Even better.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's what it comes down to is that everyone's terrified of quarterback play.
Yeah, and it's so silly. I mean, Harris wasn't that bad last year. I'm not saying he was great, but he wasn't that bad.
He wasn't Anthony Jennings. Good. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He had some bad games when he was hurt.
Yes.
But if you look at the whole season, Harris had a good year, particularly for a sophomore.
And I feel – God bless him. I feel like Anthony Jennings' awful year is really rubbing on Harris. And Harris is awfully, you know, benching and all that too. But it's not the same thing.
Yeah, no. Jennings was throwing under 50% for the season.
Yeah. And
he was just a terrible quarterback.
It reached about game five and we were all like he just doesn't have it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's – you could tell he just doesn't have it at this
it's
level.
It wasn't like laziness or anything like that because I think he's a hard worker. He's a good kid. It's just
– Yeah, and I like how he stood on the sidelines and cheered for Harris during that comeback against Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Like, he said all the right things. I'm rooting for Jennings. Oh, yeah. If Harris gets hurt and Jennings comes in the game, I'm cheering my ass for him. I don't think good things are going to happen just because I don't think he's very good. But – I don't think it's because of lack of effort or lack of trying or not knowing the playbook or lack of leadership or anything like that. I just think that there's a certain point you just don't have enough talent.
Yeah.
I think you could tear it up at a lower lower level. If he went to whatever they call 1AA right now.
I hope he does.
I mean, yeah.
I think it's inevitable. It was weird, like the signing day, Miles said, someone asked about competition for the quarterback, and Miles referenced only Danny Etling. He didn't reference Jennings at all, and I was like, that's kind of awkward.
That's not good, because Danny Etling is not a great either. And that's actually – the nervousness at quarterback should not be Brandon Harris, because sophomores who played as well as he did last year – or – sophomore quarterbacks who had statistics similar to Brandon Harris tend to end up being really good SEC quarterbacks. Yes. They don't all end up being stars, but they tend to be good.
Yes. And that's all we need.
Quarterbacks who had freshman stats like Anthony Jennings tend to always be bad.
Yep.
So the nervousness at the quarterback position should not be, oh, Brandon Harris is awful and LSU has no hope. The worry should be is if Brandon Harris gets hurt – who plays?
Yeah, where do we go now?
The worry is depth, not starter.
Yep, I agree.
But that's the thing with almost any contender. I mean, how many teams carry two quarterbacks that can win you a title?
Well, hell, Alabama lost last year when they started their backup. The one game they started Cooper Bateman, they lost. And, I mean, I know it was a lot of other bullshit that went into that game. It's just an interesting sidebar to it, I guess.
Well, it's also because he threw a ton of picks.
Yeah.
And that's what goes into it. Like, they don't lose that game if they don't turn the ball over a ton. And they turn the ball over a ton because their quarterback wasn't their quarterback. You know, they didn't have a good backup. And that was the best team in the country.
Yeah, and honestly, Billy's made this point. There are far more great college football teams that have great, dominant defensive lines than have great, dominant quarterbacks. So,
yeah, I think it's true.
We're probably built that way.
There's a bare minimum of quarterback play you need to have to win.
Absolutely.
But then again, like LSU, if you're looking, we can look right one state over of what's the platonic ideal, and it's Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
If LSU can run Arkansas's offense, LSU wins the national title. It's that simple.
Yeah. And people that want to act like we're so far off from that, I just don't think so. There's things they can do better, but we already improved from last year to this year. And that's still with a bunch of sophomores. So what's the next step? The next logical step is another gigantic one.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to, at this point, Alabama has earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, sure.
And I know there's a little bit of rewriting of history of, like, how dare anyone question Alabama last year. On paper, Alabama should have taken a step back last year. If you look at it,
All
the factors pointed to Alabama not being as good last year. Not being, like, the collapse of the dynasty. That was ridiculous.
No, that was dumb, but yeah.
It looked like they were going to be 9-3, 10-2.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like this was a door opening for anyone. And they reloaded that offense, which was gutted the way our offense had been gutted the year prior, and didn't miss a beat.
Yep.
It was really, let's be honest, Saban's best job. And this team was just dominant. They killed teams, and they were the best team in the country. The door was open, but it turned out not to be open.
Yeah.
Now they got to do it again. I think there's still, once again, I think there's another, if you look at it objectively, if this was any other team at Alabama, I would look at that team and be like, this is a team that's clearly going to take a step back. They're losing too much. This team is still going to be good, but they're not going to be great. But at this point, I'm just kind of like, Alabama, they're going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, we're forced to believe that.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between Alabama and LSU right now. LSU, you look at all the factors, and if you're looking at totally objective, not name at the top, you'd be like, this LSU, this team is going to be awesome. And you put LSU up there, and you're like, the quarterback's going to be awful. And they're going to lose. And, you know, it's a narrative of our own making. And the way you break it is by beating Alabama. So
it's very true. But, I mean, and, you know, here we are. We lead this discussion by saying that game has poisoned us and we put too much emphasis on it, and it's right back to win that game. And
yeah, but I think in this case is we're not talking about 2011. I think it's more the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the games against Alabama. Like, it's now, what is it, five straight games.
Five straight games, yeah.
That adds up, and some of them LSU outplayed, even outcoached Alabama in some of those games and still lost. And that's, you know, right now they got your number. And
which the, is,
It's like Arkansas's beaten LSU twice, but I don't really feel that Arkansas has LSU's number. I don't go into that game thinking, oh my God, it's Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to – but Ole Miss has beaten Alabama twice in a row, and everyone around the country is sort of like, oh, Ole Miss has figured out the Alabama.
Yeah, they've got it figured out. I don't buy that.
Yeah, I don't buy that either. So, but for the same reason I don't buy that Arkansas has figured out LSU.
Right.
But that's just kind of – narratives are created by what has happened. So it's – if you don't like the narrative, go change it. And you start by making really good coaching hires. So it starts with a really good offseason, which is what we've done so far.
Yeah. And, you know, in one last defense of Craig, even though it's painful because he's from Auburn.
Yeah, I know.
He's got the I hate Alabama gene to him. So
that's good.
He'll fuel that. Yeah, and I really am curious, too. This is good. It's going to be – so Bama leads for a couple – leads, quote – that's air quotes around leads – for a couple of the high-ranking Louisiana kids for next year. We'll see how long that lasts. But it's interesting to see Les really counterpunch that by going and getting a guy that can actually recruit in Alabama. They're like, this is the first time I can remember – I mean, Brick Haley is from Gadsden, Alabama, and I think he probably had some ties there, but – he wasn't a major – like, Craig is a major Alabama recruiter. I mean, he plucked Jameis Winston out of Mobile to Florida State when both Auburn and Bama wanted him.
That's pretty big.
That's a pretty big deal. And I get that, yeah, working with Jimbo, too, there's a draw there and all that. And Florida State is no, like – they're not a nothing program.
But yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that's still a huge deal. So – what's he going to – like, any sort of momentum he can create in state for LSU and to slow up what Bama's doing and even what Auburn's doing is a huge help. A huge help. I mean, it's a big win for our program and a loss to both the programs in that state.
And that's music to my ears.
Yeah. That's the best part of the hire. I mean –
That's amazing.
And then, I mean, Billy – and that was what the logistics of it. I was curious because – we hadn't really heard anything about Ball leaving, and then all of a sudden it was, he's gone. And so Billy said that Craig had expressed interest in our running back's job. So I'm kind of curious if that's what got the proverbial ball moving.
It's very possible, and nice pun.
Wow. Yes.
Adam Jacoby is currently on our podcast.
That's true. We should have him as a guest someday.
It'll be nothing but puns. It'll be awesome. We'll move on to our next topic because I think we're kind of beating this one to death.
Yeah.
We have
Segway, motherfuckers.
A Segway, motherfucker, but I couldn't think of one. I was doing one earlier, but then you had a good point, and then I let you talk about a good point.
I ruin everything.
I'm giving you space, man. I'm giving trying to be more generous. And but this was actually suggested by on Twitter. I think it was Katie who was talking to you on Twitter, who asked if we had ever put together an all-time LSU team. So we are now spending the offseason trying to create the all-time LSU team. But because we're lazy, we didn't want to start entirely from scratch. So in 1993, LSU had the Golden Century and released an all-century team for the first 100 years of the program. And we're using that as the basis of the team and then trying to figure out if we should keep the person on the team or take them off.
That was your idea, and I'm so glad you had it.
Well, also, it gives the old guys a chance because they at least have the vouch of, hey, in 1993, this is who people thought were the best players ever in LSU history. It gives those players credibility. So it's not just someone I plucked from my ass.
And recency bias kills everyone.
I mean, it really does. There's a real benefit to playing more recently also because most of us are young and we remember them playing.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with the first position. We're going to start with quarterback. And then we're going to try and bounce around. But we'll start with the glamour position first. And one of the big things that we always say about LSU is for a great program, LSU has had bad quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
It is really amazing how few great quarterbacks have played at LSU. And even the name that a lot of people will mention from a long time, from old timey days, you know, Y.A. Tittle. Y.A. Tittle wasn't that good at LSU.
No.
In fact, even by his own admission, he wasn't that good at LSU. He he kind of developed into a great player once he got to the pros. So the player on the team of the All-Century team was Burt Jones, 1972. Actually, not SEC Player of the Year because of Alabama. But he was fourth in the Heisman voting. He was the top vote getter of any quarterback in the country. And he led the SEC in pretty much every passing category that existed. And just to make things fair, I wanted to throw in another old-timey candidate. Being the old fogey, I'm in charge of old guys. And Dan, we'll get to rep the young guys, and then we'll try and hash this out.
Damn you, millennials.
Damn you, millennials. And we'll talk about that in a second. We will talk about the Grammys. And God, it just – and that's why I hate all of you, because I had to watch that. Because normally I can just ignore it and be like, yeah, what the fuck? I don't care. But – the fact that you're like, hey, watch this for the show, I just got increasingly angry the entire way. I'm just like, I hate everything.
I can't wait for this.
Everything. So the other guy I wanted to throw in there after I badmouthed him last week was Tommy Hodson, who is LSU's all-time passing leader, threw for about 2,000 yards more than anybody else in LSU history.
It's not close.
Yeah, he owns the record. Any career record, Tommy Hodson owns it. But that's also because he was the only one who was a four-year starter. So those are the pre-1993 candidates, and Dan gets to do the post-1993.
Yeah, so by the time you're listening to this, I think the article will be posted. The article will be posted. There's no I think. So my two nominees for post-1993 were Rohan Davey and Jamarcus Russell, and I don't really think there's anybody else that even bears mention.
Yeah, and that's the amazing thing is if you look at it, that's two old-timey candidates, for lack of a better term, and two recent golden age. I like calling this the golden age of LSU football. So
yeah. So
the past 25 years, there's been two guys in the last 25 years. Other than that, pretty hard-pressed to come up with who's number five. Jeff Wickersham?
Yeah. Mettenberger?
Yeah, Mettenberger probably, but he only had one great year.
Yeah, one great year.
Herb Tyler, even though he wasn't a great quarterback, he's kind of the guy who got us out of the dark ages.
Mm-hmm.
I think he gets a lot of credit for that. It gets real thin real quick.
Yeah, it's ugly.
I mean, Jamie Howard's one of our leading guys in passing.
No, games. I was about to say, Jefferson and Lee rank in a lot of the top 10 statistically for LSU.
Yeah, just because they played for so long.
And we hated those guys. I mean,
we hated
quote unquote.
Jamie Howard got death threats.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, people, stop that. Don't ever do that.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, it's a football game. Yeah. And they're kids, for the love of God.
Just go do something productive.
But, yeah, and I'm laughing about the death threat, but I just remember when it happened at the time. I'm like, oh, my God, what is wrong with people? And honestly, two of them are kind of courtesy candidates. I think Hodson and Davey are guys that many people feel very – we have really good memories of them, and that's cool. But if you compare it to other programs, that's a pretty weak number three.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not close. I mean, Davey has the 1 year, and even his 1 year isn't, like, that remarkable. It's a very good 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys have one good year.
Right? Yeah.
And, I mean, this is not to run down Rohan Davey, because, I love him. I love Rohan Davey. But honestly, a lot of his success was that he was throwing to Josh Reed.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Josh Reed when we get to wide receivers. He might make an appearance on the list. Just throwing that out there as a possibility. So it really comes down to two guys. It comes down to Burt Jones and Jamarcus Russell. Burt, who was number four in the Heisman, got invited to New York. And Jamarcus, who I still think should have won the Heisman, but wasn't even invited and did really poorly in the voting because to this day, I have no idea why.
Yeah, it doesn't. Nothing makes sense.
Nothing makes sense. And I think a lot of it comes down to the context of numbers.
Yeah.
Burt Jones' numbers do not look great to modern eyes. They just don't. He was about a 50% passer. He threw for – I mean, he only attempted something like 210 passes.
Yeah, he had like 100 completions.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it was a different game then.
Yeah, far different.
He didn't start as a junior because Charlie Mack didn't want to start the best player on his team. I'm still entirely confused at how that happened. But Burt Jones is sort of the guy. He's the mythic figure of LSU football. He's the guy that we've always wanted to go back to. And part of that's that he had a successful pro career. He was an MVP. He was on his way to being a Hall of Fame quarterback before injuries derailed his career. I mean, Burt Jones was a great player. And if you could, you know, read up, you know, some of the people who've complimented, like Belichick is.
That's what I was going to. Belichick swears like he's the greatest quarterback he's ever seen.
Yeah, I think it was also, and this is actually one of my favorite recommendations for him, John Riggins described him as the toughest player he ever played against.
That's great.
And John Riggins just, was.
Yeah, Riggins was a tough son of a bitch.
If John Riggins calls you tough, you're tough. Yeah. But the thing is, the numbers just aren't going to jump off the page. It's only the context where you say he was number one in every SEC passing category that there was. Like he was number one in yards. He was number one. He was number one in completion percentage. He was number one in passer rating. He was number one in yards per attempt. He was number one in touchdowns. And that's the only way to make his numbers look good to modern eyes. Because Jamarcus Russell's numbers just blow his off the page.
Yeah.
On a completely unadjusted scale.
Yes.
And I think you made the point that Russell did better in the national rankings.
Yeah, that was my counter. That was my main. So we talked about this offline too. It's hard to argue these things and it not come across like you're deriding another player, right? So like you just suppose, yeah, like I'm not running down Davey. I'm not running down Hudson. It's like, no, we're not running down any of these guys. They're all amazing.
Yeah, these are the best guys who have ever played. Yeah.
The fact that they're being mentioned is testament to how good they are, first of all.
It's the problem with Hall of Fame debates.
Yeah. So
be in the discussion. You're great.
I mean, obviously, he predates me. Burt Jones predates me vastly. So I'm going on pure, like, looking at statistics. What kills me is, like, that his numbers, I'm with you totally, that I can't look at 1972 Burt Jones and be like, man, he didn't throw for 3,000 yards and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, different game, different era, totally. But even within his era, within even that season, there were other quarterbacks with comparable or better numbers and nationally, not in the conference, because he was clearly the best player in the SEC.
The one guy who truly jumps off the page, he was 13th nationally in passer rating. And the only guys that were in major conferences ahead of him were Nebraska's quarterback and USC's quarterback, and they were really, really close. And then, of course, you have the great outlier of John Huffnagel of Penn. First off, you have to remember, Penn State wasn't in the Big Ten back then. They played a really weird schedule. They played all the teams in the Northeast and West Coast. Penn State was kind of considered a team, I don't want to quite call them Boise of the era because they were better than that, but they did kind of have a knock that they always played an easy schedule.
Yeah, I forgot that was like, I mean, that's like early-ish Paterno years.
Yeah, this is not
forget that they were independent, right?
I mean, yeah, Penn State wasn't in a conference until much later, and also there just weren't a lot of teams for them to play. They did play Tennessee. They lost, but they played Tennessee. But then again, LSU lost to Tennessee that year as well. But other than that, the only other ranked team they played during the season was West Virginia, and West Virginia was like number 20, somewhere in that range. They just didn't play Alabama. You know, they didn't play Auburn, who was a top 10 team. LSU played a much stronger schedule. I don't know if that completely closes the gap. We are talking about the difference between 2,000 yards and 1,500 yards, so it's not, you know, completely say that Huffnagel blew him off the page entirely.
No.
And also, like, you can tell how well he was regarded by where he was drafted. I think Huffnagel went, like, in the 14th round of the NFL draft, and he was a senior, too.
Yeah.
And Burt Jones was the number one pick. And so people at the time clearly held Burt Jones in higher esteem.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember,
this is before modern scouting. This was back then, the way NFL teams did their NFL draft is they picked up a copy of Street and Smith's and just looked at college players, you know, in the Street and Smith's.
Right.
And once again, kids, ask your dad.
Even I know what Street and Smith is.
Street and Smith was awesome. But it was on his last legs when, you know, even 20 years ago, Street and Smith was on his last legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yes, Huffnagel's definitely the counterpoint. But Burt Jones was considered at the time a better player than Huffnagel. I think that's sort of like trying to downgrade a player now because of... You would look at Doughty's numbers from Western Kentucky and be like, oh my God, look at this guy's numbers. He's clearly the best player in the country. You know, these other quarterbacks are awful. Like, you know, Doughty's on another planet. And yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's – actually, I'm really glad you brought up the Penn State being not in the Big Ten, because my experience with Penn State is that, oh, they're a Big Ten stalwart. They are this – classic legendary team in the Big Ten, and that's what they do. Whatever you want to say about the Big Ten and that they're not the SEC or whatever, all that bullshit. Yeah. I'm not going to get into that. It is a different perspective to think of them as an independent team trying to sort of prove their worth in era, rather than like, this is one of the legendary programs in college football, which is the experience my generation has with them.
Yeah, Joe Pa was just starting at this point. One of their big rivals was Maryland, for God's sake. I mean, Maryland was actually kind of good back then, but they started their long ascent into meaninglessness. I say this as a Marylander, so I lived through some bad Maryland teams before I went to LSU and lived through bad LSU teams. And the big thing that Burt Jones also has going for him is kind of the mythic quality. The set your clocks back 4 seconds is sort of...
I can't argue this.
I mean, that's probably one of the most famous LSU moments prior to the televised era.
Yeah.
And that's just something that lives in lore. I mean, that's right up there with Billy Cannon's run. I mean, it's Billy Cannon's punt return, Fox back 4 seconds. I think those are the two plays of LSU history before we get to every game's on TV. And then you start getting to like the Bluegrass Miracle and stuff like that. So I think Burt Jones wins kind of on a mythic level, which I think for quarterbacks kind of matters. I think it matters more for for an all-time team, I think it matters for anybody. I think that mythic quality matters. And Jamarcus Russell doesn't quite have that, though he does have the hole he could throw at the length of the field from his knees thing, which...
But so does Jones.
Yeah, it wasn't true, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah. But no, I'm totally with you on this because, hell, that's part of the reason Rohan Davey is even nominated, is because he carries that mythic quality for whatever reason. And Russell is very emblazoned on my memory just for certain throws, that Tennessee game in 06 where he made just...
Yeah.
He threw it to... I mean, the touchdown was to Early Doucette, but he probably wasn't even throwing to Early Doucette, and just different plays like that. The overtime winner against Alabama to ruin their undefeated season.
Yeah, I love Jamarcus Russell. I think you made this point. I think Russell's best argument is that it wasn't just 1 year.
Yeah. He has a nice combo of both.
He is the best combo of one great year with a little bit of career value. Jones, he has some career value. He didn't start his junior year, but he played more. So you can still give Jones credit for 2 seasons, but Russell had almost twice as many attempts. I mean, Russell has a much bigger resume, and had Jamarcus Russell come back for his senior year, he clearly would be ahead of Tommy Hodson.
Yeah, he would own every record.
He would own every record, and he would have done it as only a 3-year starter.
Yeah.
And that's pretty remarkable as well. So I am torn on the two, but for me, this is tie to the legend.
You know, I went into this expecting never to back off Russell, and maybe it's because you're playing your lawyer card here.
I'm happy about that. I'm happy to play.
I think there is a very good case to be made for Burt Jones, and so I can't really argue against it.
I don't want to argue against Jamarcus Russell because
no.
I think one of the points I was trying to make there is I'm arguing for Burt Jones because Jamarcus Russell it kind of angers me that he does not have the exalted place in the LSU hierarchy that he should have. And if there's one guy who should be the... If there's one reason to really knock Burt Jones and put Jamarcus Russell as the number one guy in the all-time team is just for that validation of he belongs. Russell's our best quarterback ever, and stop holding this guy at arm's length.
Yeah. And I mean, and if you've had any reason to, like, for all the naysayers of Russell during his LSU tenure, like, let's just forget all the shit that happened after LSU. Just as an LSU player, look at what's happened since he's been gone.
Yeah.
And remember what it was like to have a truly great quarterback.
It was awesome.
It was incredible. Like, there are moments, okay, the 07 season is a little outside of this because LSU was a different sort of animal that year. That was a weird team. Even a national championship winner, yeah. But they were a little odd. That season, 06, with Russell, there was never a game where I felt like we couldn't win, even if we got, like, he gave us a chance.
I think he still owns the record for most comebacks.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he does.
Which I know will be then spun around as, well, it was his fault, LSU was trailing in those games. Which
is never the case.
Russell was really good. And I do, that is actually one of my favorite things about Jamarcus Russell. The guy had guts.
Yeah.
When LSU fell down, he was definitely the master of the two-minute drill.
That Tennessee game, that's like...
Yeah.
I know that, like, he destroyed Notre Dame, which was amazing to watch, but, like, that Tennessee game was a work of art. He played so well in that game.
And so that's the case for Russell. So I don't think you need to back down entirely from Jamarcus Russell. So I don't want to talk you out of – I think for me, the all-time team, I still stick with Burt Jones just for the – just because of the idea of the legend. But I think Russell's case, it's about validation. And also, I think it's – this is something we're going to run into a little bit more as we go along. The difference between career value and one season.
Yeah.
And this isn't like baseball where you can just deride a player and just be like, oh, well, you just had one good year. Well, that's pretty much a college career.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, one good year, one great year is pretty much enough to make you a legend in college football.
Yeah.
Particularly now because you leave so early.
Well,
but
yeah. Even
great players tend to only have two seasons where they're a starter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, yeah. Ultimately, like, I don't. I think the coming discussions will be a lot more difficult than this one. We have a difficult 1-2 discussion where it's just kind of a toss up. But there's going to be a lot more candidates for the other positions.
And also, I think with this one, there's no wrong choice.
No,
it's really what it comes down to, and. It's whether you value just straight numbers of Jamarcus or whether you need context adjustment for Jones, but also how much you like legend,
yeah.
How much you like stories. And I've already said I like stories. And Burt Jones is a better story.
Yeah, and I think ultimately I can settle on Jones as sort of being the LSU's quarterback. Like, he's the guy. He's the standard everyone's measured against, right?
Right. That's sort of my case.
And that means something.
Yeah, I think it does. But, man, Jamarcus was fun to watch. And that's where recency bias comes in. Because even though I'm the fogey here, I never saw Burt – I saw Burt Jones play in pros.
Yeah.
But I never saw him play at LSU. I wasn't born yet.
Well, hell, maybe we'll throw up the article, throw a poll at the end – and then
we'll leave this one up to the users because I think there really is no wrong call.
And see what they say.
Normally, we're not going to leave this up to the unwashed masses.
No,
sorry.
It's not ideal.
Yeah, this is a dictatorship, not a democracy.
We own you, motherfuckers.
That's right. We're going to choose who we want, but we're going to throw you this sop because we can't decide amongst ourselves, and we think that you can't fuck it up.
So don't fuck it up.
So speaking of fucking it up, let's talk about the Grammys. Segue, motherfucker.
Yes.